Good morning. It's Tuesday, December 2nd. I'm Shumitza Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, Beijing's grip on Hong Kong faces a major test after its devastating fire. Michael Jordan's plans to transform another sport, and why Costco is suing the Trump administration. But first, tonight, according to President Trump, the whole world is watching a rural part of Tennessee. That's because there's a special election for a House seat tonight, a race that's turned out to be very close.
If you look at the results from last year's presidential election, Donald Trump won the 7th District of Tennessee, this district, by 22 percentage points, which suggests that this is a fairly reliably conservative district.
Anthony Zerker is a correspondent with the BBC who recently spent time in Tennessee to report on the race. A Democratic win would be the first there for more than 40 years and would further chip away at the razor-thin Republican majority in the House at a moment in which recent Gallup polling indicates the president's approval rating is the lowest it's been in his term so far.
So while it's just one district and it won't determine who controls Congress, at least in the short run, it could have a lot of significance for how this country is feeling. That's why both parties are sinking resources into this, because Republicans don't want this to be a reflection on voters souring on their control of government.
Democrat Afton Bain is a progressive running against conservative Republican veteran Matt Van Epps. Yet for both candidates, the issue of affordability has dominated their campaign messaging.
Matt Van Epps, 9 combat tours, true American hero.
Now I'm on a new mission to bring down prices, create good paying jobs, and lower healthcare costs for working families.
Angry about high grocery prices? Worried about healthcare costs? Feeling burned by tariffs? Then December 2nd is your day to shake up Washington. I'm Afton Bain, and in Congress, I'll work for you.
The two candidates have appeared somewhat careful to stay independent from their party's leading figures. Kamala Harris visited to campaign, but the New York Times notes Bain left the stage before any pictures could be taken of them together. Van Epps, meanwhile, has President Trump's endorsement, but Zerker reports that he hasn't talked about the president much during the campaign. Van Epps is still the favorite to win, but recent polls suggest it's a tight race.
I think a Republican loss would be a seismic event for Republicans. It would be a huge warning sign that they are not safe, even in what are considered to be comfortable Republican seats, that the voters are becoming increasingly dissatisfied with the incumbents.
No individual special election can translate into overall barometers of public opinion, and it's typical for incumbents in power to suffer losses. But Zerker found that some Republicans in the state were showing signs of disagreements with recent Trump policies relating to tariffs and visas.
There are indications of some cracks may be forming in Donald Trump's base. And while this election won't shatter that base, it could be an indication that Republicans not only are starting to try to think a little bit about distancing themselves from Donald Trump, but also starting to think about what a Republican Party future looks like after Donald Trump leaves office, which will now at this point only be in a matter of just over 3 years.
A major fire that tore through a Hong Kong apartment complex last week has left the city struggling with how to process the grief and where to direct the blame. The fire ripped through 8 tower blocks, holding 2,000 apartments. Over 150 people are now confirmed dead, with dozens still unaccounted for. Yesterday, officials said contractors working on the building had used scaffold netting that didn't meet fire safety standards, something investigators say contractors had tried to conceal. More than a dozen people have reportedly been arrested in recent days. There are now major questions being asked of the city's construction industry and of the response from the Beijing-backed government. Christian Shepherd is a China correspondent for The Washington Post.
There was bamboo scaffolding, there was mesh and foam boards that were being used to protect the building that seemed to have been highly flammable. And so it spread much faster than was expected. And at the same time, there were problems with the alarm systems in the building. So many people were trapped inside because they didn't hear about the fire until it was too difficult to escape.
Hong Kong has more skyscrapers than any other city in the world, and it's densely packed, so the failures this fire exposes leave a ripple of implications throughout the city. Shepherd told us many people are angry about why this wasn't prevented, and the government is acutely aware of how public outrage could pose a huge test for Beijing's grip on Hong Kong, only days before elections are scheduled to take place. Pro-democracy voices in the city have been silenced for years, and under national security laws imposed in 2020, only certain candidates approved by Beijing can run for elections. Shepherd said that is colliding with other longer-term concerns about failed governance in Hong Kong.
And that touches on deeper problems about whether or not the government is responsive to the needs of the people. Obviously, in Hong Kong, there has been a lot of concern about increasing encroachment from Beijing, centralization of power, unwillingness to allow more people to stand for office. And that has bled together with some of these concerns because in this instance, it seems that the government didn't feel it needed to respond or didn't respond fast enough, and people are beginning to connect those dots.
And there's some reporting that Beijing is trying to quash dissent related to this fire. Over the weekend, a student was arrested after circulating a petition calling for public accountability. A Chinese central government agency ordered a nationwide inspection of high-rise buildings, according to the Wall Street Journal, reflecting an effort to focus on safety standards at buildings. That includes a look at the use of bamboo scaffolding, which is commonplace in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong's chief executive announced a $38 million fund to house residents displaced in the fire and has promised a thorough investigation.
For some residents, this seems to be an aspect of trying to focus on just the narrow causes and not the deeper ones. And so part of the concern that you've heard is that, well, really, this is about a more systemic failure of governance. And that is, at the moment, off the table. There don't seem to be big inquiries. There don't seem to be promises to change things at a more fundamental level.
Is Michael Jordan about to transform the future of another sport? This week, he's taking it back to the court, a federal court, over one of his more recent ventures, his NASCAR team.
The Brickyard belongs to Bubba. Wallace wins at Indy, and he's going to the playoffs.
Thank you so much.
That's driver Bubba Wallace winning the Brickyard 400 in July, driving the number 23 Toyota for 2311 Racing, the NASCAR team co-owned by Michael Jordan. Jordan only broke into the sport 5 years ago, but he's now suing NASCAR, alleging the organization is using its monopoly over the sport to bully teams into accepting contract terms. Jordan wants to shake up the current model, which gives NASCAR an unusual amount of power as governing body and rulemaker. In other sports, like the NBA, the team owners hold a lot more sway over the policies. Here's The Athletic's Jeff Gluck explaining on the Teardown podcast what Jordan's allegations boil down to.
What this trial is about, essentially, yes, NASCAR has a monopoly. Have they abused that power illegally to hurt the teams financially?
And Gluck's colleague, Jordan Bianchi, explained NASCAR's perspective on the same podcast.
And NASCAR will say to you, we are giving the teams more money than we've ever gave them before. They got a bigger piece of the media rights deal that was just completed. They are earning more percentage-wise than they ever had before. So how can we have a monopoly when we're actually giving more than we've ever gave?
For his part, Michael Jordan says he's willing to risk it all. Here he is after a court hearing in August.
I've always said that I want to fight for the betterment of the sport. The point is that the sport itself needs to continually change for the better, for the fans as well as for the teams.
If Jordan loses, he could leave the sport altogether. But if NASCAR loses, the entire system underpinning how stock car racing works could be upended. NASCAR could be forced to sell its racetracks, and it could even lead to NASCAR's founding family cashing out of the business. The dispute traces back to charter negotiations between race teams and NASCAR. The organization operates differently than other leagues. Charters, which are roughly equivalent to owning a franchise, are granted to team owners, but they're not permanent. Having permanent charters was a big sticking point in contract talks, and Jordan's team refused to sign it. They were one of only two holdouts in NASCAR to reject the charter offer. Here's Bianchi from The Athletic again.
NASCAR made a take-it-or-leave-it offer to the teams after years of negotiations and basically said, here's our final offer. You sign this, or else. And the or else was, we're going to yank the charter agreement, and the charter agreement's going to go away, and you guys are going to be out, and we're going to go back to how we used to do it.
NASCAR generated $1.7 billion in revenue last year and more than $100 million in profit. Race car teams, meanwhile, lost an average of $2.5 million per car they operate. The Athletic describes this case as a combination of ego and money, a clash between two parties who are used to getting what they want in negotiations. It'll get hashed out and decided by a jury in a North Carolina court over the next few weeks, potentially changing the direction of NASCAR. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. President Trump unlawfully appointed his former attorney as New Jersey's top prosecutor. That was the judgment of an appeals court yesterday in a ruling that could have national implications. Alina Haba was appointed on an interim basis, but the White House attempted to bypass the Senate confirmation process and keep her in place beyond the 120-day time limit. The complaint against her stemmed from criminal defendants who argued she was illegally overseeing her case. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's because it is similar to the case that James Comey's lawyers made to get his case dismissed. The ruling applies only to Haba, but the Washington Post points out it could foreshadow more challenges to come for Trump-allied prosecutors currently serving beyond their acting term limits. Costco has become the latest company to sue the Trump administration over tariffs. They want a full refund of all duties paid as a result of the executive order that imposed so-called reciprocal tariffs. Costco didn't specify how much they felt they'd lost over the order, but about a third of Costco's sales in the U.S. are imported products. In a recent earnings call, their leadership said they'd effectively absorbed price hikes on key staple items from Central and South America, like fresh fruit. NBC reports that through the end of October, the government had collected over $200 billion in tariffs, but the Supreme Court is currently weighing their legality. Costco says they fear that even if the justices rule against the White House, they would struggle to recover the costs so far. And finally, this year's Oxford University Press Word of the Year is ripped right out of the social media comment section, ragebait, which is defined as online content deliberately designed to elicit anger or rage. Publishers say this year's news cycle was dominated by social unrest and concerns over our digital well-being. Experts noted, however, that ragebait this year has changed to signal deeper shifts in how we talk about attention, engagement, and ethics online. Oxford University Press also notes usage of the phrase ragebait has increased threefold over the course of this year. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Bloomberg Businessweek has the story of how Target, once king of the trendy, cheap retail space, is struggling with dissatisfied customers and unhappy investors, and whether its new CEO can breathe new life into the company. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.